Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking Penn State football. And we're talking weddings, Steve. That's where I was on Saturday. One of the great days of college football. I was in Norwalk, Connecticut at a wedding.
How was the wedding?
Actually, as much pissing and moaning as I did about it last week, and our listeners heard me over and over again, it was very nice. I'm glad I went. It was one of those all-in-one venues. So the wedding was there, the reception was there, stayed there at the hotel. All that was fantastic. And a quick funny story and a shout out to one of our listeners, Annie, who's out of Raleigh, North Carolina. Get this, a couple years ago in the same family, the groom who's a nephew, his sister got married, and I met a family member who told me how her husband's a big Penn State fan, and it got evolved what I do in the show, the podcast version. She started listening to the show, she said, so she could keep up with her husband in Penn State. So I got to see her at the wedding. She said, oh, I listen to you all the time. So, Annie, shout out to you. Thank you for listening to the show. It was wonderful to talk to you, and I'll see you at the next wedding. So a lot of good things. I also had to deal with PennDOT, Pennsylvania's Department of Transportation.
Yeah,
they made the drive back. It took me an extra half hour, Steve, because they had to merge into one lane because there was just it looked like a leftover construction vehicle blocking one of the lanes. That's it. No actual construction, just a truck sitting there. And an extra half hour of driving because they couldn't move the darn truck.
Well, I'm familiar with it driving up from the D.C. area. They leave all the construction in place, even though they're not working on the road. And that 30 minutes to me sounds pretty good. I'm usually looking at an extra hour here just for the weekends, even though they're not doing any work. But I'm glad it was a good wedding and all's well that ends well.
Well, D.C. is just another, when you talk traffic, I did my time there in D.C. for a couple years, but all went well, except, like, I did get there in time to watch, like, the first half and a little bit of the third quarter of the Penn State game, so I didn't get to see anything else for the rest of the games. Anything exciting happened in the rest of college football, Steve?
Well, that's weird. Joking about this earlier before we recorded, you know, it's the weekend. You sort of look ahead and you think, oh, this is going to be sort of an off week. And then we get all the excitement with all the upsets. And I think it just sort of points to the fact that, keep in mind, you're dealing with a lot of young men and a lot of the inconsistency that comes with that. That's why there's never really an off weekend, even looking ahead to the games that are coming up. So,
well, we're gonna hit some of that national news a little bit later. But, see, I do – it's an interesting issue that's going on as it does seem like there's more upsets going on. I mean, the top 10 got decimated this past weekend, specifically Southeast Conference top 10 schools. And all offseason we were talking about the transfer portal and NIL and what effect it would have on the game. And I think a lot of folks just assumed, you know what, the lesser teams are going to get crushed because all their best players are going to move on to the better teams. But it actually seems like it's a little bit different. Some of the guys who started with the big schools are transferring to other schools to get an opportunity to play. We saw that at Penn State firsthand a couple weeks ago with the quarterback at Bowling Green, who had started at Missouri, then went to Indiana, and ended up at Bowling Green and playing very well. Vanderbilt had a lot of transfers that helped them. And next thing you know, they're beating Alabama. So I just wanted to get your take on it. Am I off base thinking in some ways the portal has leveled the playing field a bit?
Well, I think it gives an opportunity for teams to plug and play where they might have identified some weaknesses heading into the season rather than have to sort of write a season or two off as it did before trying to address it through just recruiting and retention. The other thing to keep in mind that I thought was interesting, particularly with the SEC, you know, in the DC area, so I'm familiar with the, sort of the political spin given the work that I'm in. And it's been interesting to see how after all the sort of top seeded teams suffered losses that now there's like, oh, this idea of parity. You know, it's an interesting way of looking at it, but, you know, you don't play with the cards you're dealt, I guess. But to your point, you know, Jim, I think really it goes to the fact that, you know, you are able to plug, again, these holes that you sort of identify heading in with the transfer portal. And that's, I think, beneficial to all sides. You know, if you're not playing at one particular school for one reason or another, to have an opportunity to play somewhere else, showcase your talents, I think that's good for the players. And then, you know, when you talk about like the Vanderbilt-Alabama upset, I think that was probably the biggest one, although there were plenty of upsets this weekend to take your pick. But you're just dealing with the emotional points for these young men after a big week against Georgia. Obviously, that big win there for Alabama, the idea of going on the road and no longer being able to just, you know, assume that you're just going to be able to waltz over this opponent because they have plugged those holes. And that should be a look at, you know, for Penn State, you know, you look at sort of ahead at some of the upcoming games and you might think, okay, this may not be necessarily the game that jumps out at you, but you can't take any game for granted. And so I think that's something to keep in mind as we sort of start projecting what the season's going to finish up here for the Nittany Lions.
And what's interesting was that Vanderbilt, if you hadn't seen Vanderbilt play, they have a really good quarterback who was a transfer, and he's exciting, and he makes them a different team. And one last wedding story to all of this. Earlier in the day, I bumped into somebody, and we were chatting college football, and he mentioned how his niece attends Vanderbilt, which, you know, no kind of football school, but they're good at baseball, but, well, they just, you know, show up for football games. And, well, lo and behold, Vanderbilt pulls off the upset, and I bumped into him later on at the reception, and I said something to him about it. Ironic that you brought up your niece who's at Vanderbilt. He pulls out his phone and shows me a picture that she sent to him. Post game, the Vanderbilt students stormed the field. She sent him a picture from the field with her on the field.
Well, my understanding is that prior to the game, Nick Saban, who's now a commentator, former coach at Alabama, made the remark that, you know, there's no easy games in the SEC except when you go to Vanderbilt. And I believe that it was reported that the Vanderbilt Commodores took great joy in replaying those comments after the game. But that's one of the things that makes it very exciting. I should point out, you know, to those obviously following Penn State, listening to this show, another upset that we saw was Minnesota beating USC. And, you know, we talk about this contrast stuff. Maybe we'll talk about the upcoming game in a little bit. But, you know, it's sort of a reminder that college football, you know, anything can happen with these young guys and who's ready to play and who's not ready to play.
That's true. The interesting thing, though, with you mentioned Nick Saban making comments about going to Vanderbilt. Well, he didn't lose any games going to Vanderbilt. You know, and his famous comment about the rat poison, which is when you start listening to or reading the headlines. And I think maybe his Alabama players or Kellen DeBoer's Alabama players did that after the Georgia win. And Nick Saban was particularly good at not allowing that to happen. Another interesting statistic that came out, I read somewhere that Vanderbilt, they were 0-60 in games against top five teams. 0-60! And here they get the win against the number one team. And I've seen enough highlights of it. Vanderbilt, it wasn't like some fluke plays that happened. They won the game.
Exactly. I think that's the thing that'd be most concerning for Alabama. If you look at the time of possession for Vanderbilt and the fact that they were controlling the lines of scrimmage. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, multiple interceptions on the Alabama side and a lot of fluke plays. It was a dominant performance by Vanderbilt.
And if you're an Alabama fan, you got to be concerned now. This is like a game and a half where this full game, you gave up a lot of points to Vanderbilt. And remember last week, the last second half of that game against Georgia, how many points they gave up to Georgia. And that's not what you expect from an Alabama defense.
No, it's not. But again, Alabama was the only team to lose. And I just sort of look at it as a Penn State fan, all this being good in terms of, you know, we talk about how many playoff spots that are out there and the fact that a number of teams that were ranked ahead of Penn State or around Penn State suffered either their first loss or their second loss, to me, is all good news for Penn State in terms of looking at their odds to secure a playoff spot.
And the other thing, I referenced this quite a bit. I did a little exercise prior to the season starting, looking at the Southeast Conference, because there's so many teams and they only play eight league games. The schedule is really very varied team to team. And I did the exercise of, what if everything just goes to chalk? You lose to the higher ranked team. And I can't remember, maybe it was ESPN's ranking, whoever's rankings that I use. And it came out at the end of the day, there were like 7-8 teams with two losses or fewer. Maybe it was even 9 teams. And it's like, holy cow, how are they going to sort that out? Well, the fly in the ointment is when there's these upsets and you're going to be comparing records at the end of the year, and Alabama getting what I can only call the extra loss against Vanderbilt, Tennessee with the extra loss against Arkansas, and, you know, Missouri, I'm not sure if that was an extra loss or just an exposure that Missouri's not very good, Steve.
No, I mean, we'll see how the season plays out. But, I mean, even you're seeing it in the Big Ten. I mean, USC now, I think, with 2 losses, Michigan with 2 losses. You know, you're looking at teams that are sort of competing with Penn State for the potential playoff spot there. This is all good news. And, again, looking ahead to the USC game, I mean, the fact that they have 2 losses, their backs are against the wall if they want to try to preserve their playoff potential. And I think that introduces a different dynamic looking ahead to the Saturday's game. You know, is that going to be something that motivates them, or are they going to play with this added pressure that actually works to their detriment?
Or are they going to mail it in because, my goodness, we've already got 2 losses things are going downhill. That does happen. But, Steve, when we come back for quarter number 2, how about we talk about the Penn State game?
That sounds like a good idea.
All right, we'll do that as soon as we get back from this break.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. It's quarter number 2. We're talking Penn State football. But before we get started in quarter number 2, little announcement. Friday, November 8th. That's the day before the whiteout game. The collective at Penn State, Happy Valley United, they are sponsoring a whiteout party at the Nittany Lion Inn. This is the new renovated Nittany Lion Inn. It's going to be that Friday night from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. There's going to be live music. There's going to be dancing, food. My personal favorite, Steve, an open bar. Can't beat that. There's going to be several Penn State lettermen there. You're going to want to join in. It'll be a lot of fun. And if you want tickets and more info, just head over to happyvalleyunited.com. That's happyvalleyunited.com. They'll have all the information there, all the information on tickets. It's going to be a fun night. Hope to see you there. All right. Steve, How about we talk about the Penn State game against UCLA? It seems like we're getting some trends forming for this Penn State football team, aren't we?
Yes, although I thought we had some positive trends in the opposite direction that we thought were working against us, in the sense that in this game, I don't recall seeing any offside penalties on the defense. Definitely cut down a little bit there. You know, we also had two field goals made, one 40 yards out. So to me, that's positive. Look, I think you may be referring to sort of the becoming characteristic slow starts, you know, and that's a little discouraging heading into this weekend with USC. I know we talked about them sort of stumbling against Minnesota, but I don't think you want to get in a position where you're playing from behind if you're Penn State and falling down. So I think that's another concern. But again, another positive, pattern that's emerging is really dominant third quarter performances, both offensively and defensively. Shows that, you know, the coaches are making good adjustments at the half and not only identifying them, but executing the play calls. And I think that's a sign that you have the right people in place. I just sort of wish that we could start a little stronger so we're not having to necessarily make all as many adjustments as we are. In terms of the final score, look, I wouldn't read too much into that. Nick Singleton, obviously a home run hitter, didn't play. I don't think his not being on the field should be overlooked here. And then with defensively, look, the starting defense gave up 3 points. I know that sort of the folks that were in there on the last drive gave up, you know, a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. It's important for those guys to get reps because you never know when injuries are going to occur. But to prevent injuries from occurring, it's also important to get some of those starters out of there. Another trend, I guess, that, again, having a little concern, particularly heading into this weekend with USC and their vaunted passing attack, is it seems that teams are having a pretty easy go of it, at least in the first half, of executing these quick passes against the defense. And that's a little concerning. And then a trend that I think is positive offensively, others may not agree because it may not be as sexy of a on-field product, is just Penn State running the ball and keeping the ball and being this dominant performance. I think teams are starting to play with two high safeties to prevent a lot of the deep passes and the deep plays from developing against Penn State. That's fine. Kotelnicki, the team, are smart for seeing what's there. Anytime you're a quarterback, you see two high safeties, you should check into a run. And I think that's what the team is doing. And, you know, we talked about all these teams in the first quarter that weren't able to get the job done when they were supposed to. And I think despite all the ups and downs, Penn State is still undefeated. They're still putting a good product out on the field. And I think they have a lot of momentum heading into Saturday.
There are a lot of good things going on. And it's hard for me to tell. I don't know if it's like a tendency of Tom Allen. Do they start out kind of vanilla, kind of get a feel for the game? And we're seeing inferior opponents, you know, move the ball down the field. And on the offensive side, though, a little disconcerting early on when the offense first two possessions ended in punts. They were 0-for-2 on third down situations. But by the end of the first half, they were 6-for-8 on third downs. So I think the slow start on offense, I pointed at Drew Aller, who I think started the game slow, missed a couple people. He wasn't, and I think they got a drop in there too. But I don't think Drew Aller was really sharp in the first couple possessions.
No, I'm sure there are a few passes early on he'd rather have bat. I'm also kind of curious as to some of the third down calls early on. It seems like they keep running. To me, seems like the same play and sort of this quick out. And I don't know if they're anticipating tight man coverage on that. Instead, they're getting zone. But again, from the fans' perspective, it looks to be the same play. They might want to find a new one. I guess they probably have some plays they've been holding back here. But, you know, I think it's really important this weekend to not fall behind. You know, if you want to get ahead of USC, I mean, look, this isn't Lincoln Riley's. This is Lincoln Riley's team. This isn't Pete Carroll's USC. Penn State should be able to run the ball effectively. They should be able to score points on this defense. That said, Lincoln Riley has a good quarterback. It's not Caleb Williams, who went to my high school, so I'm a little biased. But the quarterback that they do have is still pretty effective. And that's sort of what I'm curious to see is what really is this Penn State pass defense. What shape are they in? I think there's some reasons for skepticism heading into this. I hope I'm just being overly cautious and they're able to answer those questions, but that's something that does concern me. You know, and I think too, the fact that, you know, Singleton wasn't playing, that means Allen got to play more, but I don't know that he's as effective because he's not as fresh. Just having these, you know, different running backs with different styles, that is much more difficult to scheme for if you're the defense there. And, you know, one of the things I will sort of maybe fault Allen for a little bit on the defensive side is, you know, while they're only giving up 3 points, they're not getting off the field that quickly. You know, I think that's something where we've sort of seen this pattern now through the last several games, particularly in the first half where, you know, maybe Penn State talked about their offensive struggles doing 3 and out. I'd like to see more 3 and out, you know, on the opponent's side.
You know, what was interesting, Steve, and I want to get your thoughts on this. I mentioned that I thought Drew Aller started slow. When they were up, I guess it was 7-3, essentially the last possession of the first half, they had 2.5 minutes to go the length of the field. And it felt to me like they said, okay, this is one where we can't just ground and pound it. We'll run out of time. They said, okay, Drew, this is your drive. It's on you. After a first incompletion, here's what happened. 6-yard completion to Dinkins, 24-yard completion to Clifford, 12-yard completion to Fleming, 25-yard completion to Trey Wallace, and it was first and goal, and then they pounded it into the end zone from there. So it was interesting to me that they took a series, not because it was time running out. Hey, they said, we're going to have to throw the ball on this series. And Drew, it was like Drew Aller found a rhythm because he was just given the ball and said, hey, you know, fire away. And what to me, my takeaway of that is not, hey, you don't run the ball now. We're a passing team. It's, I feel like they're able to do it if they need to.
I think so. And I also think in defense of the run, that's something that's going to get better as the game goes on. You know, some of these runs that are maybe 2 or 3 yards are going to go for 8, 9. And if we have Singleton, maybe even break potentially for a touchdown later in the game. That's sort of, we're trying to wear down that defense. And by possessing the ball, put yourself, I think, in a more advantageous position as opposed to giving it to the other side. So I think you're correct in pointing out that Aller's an effective quarterback. And one of the things that was unique about what you laid out is that he was finding multiple different receivers there, not relying on one person. I thought that was one of the other encouraging things from this week, getting Liam Clifford. I think he had over 100 yards.
Yes.
You know, Julian Fleming had some big catches. I was rooting for him to sort of get across the goal line there. He got stopped, I think, at like the 1-inch line. You know, some point he'll get across there. But just the fact that, you know, spreading the ball around, seeing the field, and, you know, giving a chance for some of these other people to contribute are all encouraging signs heading into this weekend, because you don't want to feel like you're overly reliant on one particular person.
I'm in agreement with you, and I believe that Nick Singleton being out, you missed the home run from the running back position. Catron Allen's longest run and the team's longest run of the day was 11 yards. Now, I think Catron Allen had several 9, 10, 11-yard runs, but you didn't have someone like Nick Singleton ripping off 25, 30, 40 yards in one play.
No, and that's Allen's style. And I think one of the things that may have been missed by Singleton was he has improved, in my opinion, at catching the ball out of the backfield and really being an effective receiving option now. And I think that may have been something that, you know, maybe Aller at times could have benefited from having that option there.
And, you know, again, looking at the silver lining to some of this with Nick Singleton missing is we got our first look at Quentin Martin, and he caught the ball 3 times out of the backfield. Nice to see, because we had heard that he could be a weapon catching the ball.
Yeah, no, it's encouraging. I mean, look, the running back position should always be a position of strength at Penn State. You know, there's a lot of depth there. And I think there's a lot of reason for optimism, even when Singleton and Catron Allen move on, that the cupboard's not going to be bare.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. It was unfortunate, Cam Wallace getting hurt, but Quentin Martin seems to be next man up. And I thought he performed pretty well. When we get back, there's a few more things I want to ask you about before we do take a look at the national picture. And I guess what I'm going to start with, Steve, is there a new mindset now in college football when you combine everything that's going on? You're getting so many of these upsets. I mean, this was multiple non-ranked teams beating top 10 teams. And now it's not so much style points. It's and this game was never in doubt. Penn State, there was no threat that UCLA was going to win this game. But is it now just survive in advance? Get the W, move on. And if you're Penn State, where someone, maybe if you put money on this game, you're saying it wasn't that impressive a win. But you look around the top 10, oh boy, things could have been a whole lot worse than that. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim, talking Penn State football here in quarter number three. Steve, you and I were talking between segments about UCLA and the thought, well, they're playing the backup quarterback. And you mentioned sometimes it's different. You're preparing for a different style. But if you look at the numbers from the starting quarterback, this might be a permanent change to the backup quarterback here. He might be the better option for UCLA.
I thought the guy was effective. I mean, he's a big guy. He took what was there. He's also a threat to run the ball, which I don't think should be dismissed. And I thought, you know, in Penn State's defense, preparing for one guy and sort of, I think, ending up with another option, those guys adjusted well. Look, I like Abdul Carter in terms of them being flexible with him. I saw some disagrees coming from the almost linebacker position, the middle sometimes being the spy, which I think is a really good way to deal with the threat that some of these running quarterbacks pose. I thought he made a very nice play when it looked like it was going to he was rushing the passer and then sort of recognized instinctively that it was going to be a spring. He tackled the guy, which may not seem like a big deal, but that's really tough to do and execute. I think Tony Rojas did something similar earlier in the game. I thought he played very well. Jalen Reed continues to be a force multiplier, and I thought he made a really effective play, not only tackling the quarterback there for a big sack, stripping the ball. The football bounces a funny way. And had that gone in Penn State's favor, they may have just walked in with six there. But that's sort of how the game goes. But overall, I feel better about the defense. Again, we're going to find out more about this pass defense this week when we see USC. Penn State's record in Los Angeles isn't the greatest. I don't believe they've ever won out there in terms of playing USC. So that's what I'm sort of excited and nervous about as a fan, just to see where that pass defense is. Particularly the last time we really saw them tested was that game against Ole Miss in the bowl game, which is something most people would probably prefer to forget.
Well, looking ahead to that game, and you and I, again, we were discussing this off the air, how does USC react to where they are right now with a couple conference losses? Do they take it and say, hey, our back's against the wall, we come out fighting, because we cannot afford one more loss. With two losses, we still have a shot at making it to the playoffs. Or is it more, you know, like, okay, we found out USC just playing is not a very good team. And, you know, the great fear Penn State fans had of going to LA and USC isn't as big a deal.
I mean, for the life of me, I can't figure out why these Lincoln Riley coach teams, both at USC and Oklahoma, predating that, how there can be such a disparity on defense. I really just can't understand that. I mean, those teams aren't physical, to put it politely. Penn State should move the ball at will. I didn't see as much of the Minnesota game. As you know, I have one son who's one, one son who's three. So anything after eight is usually off limits for me. If it's Penn State, I'll record it and watch it. I don't have the same commitment to other teams. But I did watch a fair amount of USC's game against Wisconsin. It was when Wisconsin was out there, and Wisconsin was pushing them around. Wisconsin was in a position to win the game until a guy went and fumbled a punt. And I guess where I'm going with this is I think the turnovers are the key. I think USC had three turnovers last night, and Penn State needs to win the turnover differential. I mean, Miller Moss, the quarterback for USC, he's going to put it up there. And, you know, you have to make a play. And I think that's the big thing is don't beat yourselves. And Penn State will be the more physical team. That's not something we've been really able to say it under Franklin, but I will give the team credit this year. That seems to be something that, as a fan, I'm more encouraged to see them moving in that direction. And that's what I'm curious to see with Kotelnicki is, you know, is he going to sort of try to establish this run as we talked about, able to wear this Trojan defense down the hose of bigger things later in the game? That's going to depend really on the Penn State defense keeping that Trojan offense in check, because if you sort of fall behind, then Penn State sort of maybe has to execute that 2-minute offense under Aller just to try to keep up more. That's not the position that Penn State wants to find themselves in. But to answer your question directly, I don't know how they're going to respond. But again, I think it's, you know, really incumbent on Penn State to go in there, start fast. And if they get a early lead, maybe show some doubts there. So maybe USC will quit on themselves a little earlier than anticipated.
Well, a couple of thoughts here. First of all, read a stat somewhere. I think it's Big Ten teams having to travel multiple time zones. Things have not gone well.
Good. Indiana, yeah. I think, is the only one with the win going out to UCLA.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you pointed this out to me, too, is I had forgotten about this, is Ohio State's going out to Oregon also next week. And I think Ohio State, you know, very quietly, because they haven't had any big games. They had Iowa this past weekend. They haven't been tested. My instinct tells me Ohio State's the much better team than Oregon. Oregon has not been that impressive thus far, but, you know, that's why they play the games, as they say. Now, for Penn State, it's also going to be that kind of travel. But I think USC, the thought that Penn State would get away from the running game, I don't think that's going to happen. We've now got enough of a sample size where, you know, Penn State's been through five games, and many games they've they've run the ball twice as often as they've passed the ball. This game against UCLA, it was a little more balanced, but I don't think there's any way Penn State's going to get away from the, you know, running the ball and pounding it, especially if Nick Singleton is back and healthy.
As long as they're not playing from behind, I think you're right. Again, the stat may be a little misleading just because Penn State has usually found themselves in most of these games with a decent lead, at least through the third quarter. So I think that may encourage them to run the ball a little bit more than they want. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is a lot of teams that Penn State has played against sort of, I think, honestly recognize that they have inferior talent. And one of the reasons they've tried to address that is by running the ball to keep the Penn State offense off the field. And that's where I think we may see a different approach here from USC, where, you know, their real skill set is throwing the ball. And, you know, if they get a quick three and out or a Penn State turnover, then there's a chance that Penn State more get offensive opportunities this time. Now, you have to make the most of those, which, again, is why I'm encouraged that they made the change there at the kicking position. Long overdue, in my opinion, given Zahedek lost last year's competition. I really don't know why they waited this long to do this. But the encouraging thing is, you know, they went ahead, they recognized it, and the guy made two field goals, one including from 40 yards on Saturday. That I thought is encouraging to give some momentum heading into the game this Saturday.
Yeah, I think that was a big deal. I had said last week I really wanted to see at least one, hopefully a couple, field goal attempts, successful field goal attempts, to feel better about it going into the USC game. I probably would not have been as quick with the hook with Sander Sahadek. You know, if you say on the team, hey, look, at practice, we're going to have a competition, and this is the guy who won the competition, I think you put him out there. Well, guess what? Sahadek, he hasn't done it on the field. If he had made those two field goals last week, you say, hey, he's all fine. He's 3 for 4 and all. It's all good. He didn't. That was it. He's now 1 for 4 this year, 3 for 9 overall. It was a change that had to be made. I'm glad they made it. I'll be honest. When the kicker first came out there and they lined up for a left-footed kick, I'm like, wait a minute. I thought they were going to replace the kicker. Then I see the number and go, oh, okay, they did.
So Hidak lost last year's competition too. I mean, at some point, you need to recognize that it's in the team's best interest to move on.
And I think they did now. I thought the timing was pretty good. So hopefully going forward, that won't be an issue. I want to get back to my original question at the end of the last segment going into this third quarter about the win in advance. Is that it? Are we kind of evolving a bit now, where that you look at it, the game a little bit differently? So, you know, Penn State doesn't have to put up 50 points on a bad UCLA team. You win, keep going, and you're better off than Alabama, Missouri, and Tennessee are.
I think you're going to have a lot of politicking on the part of the coaches towards the end of the season, reminiscent of the basketball tournament, the NCAA tournament there on for basketball. You know, in terms of what is a quality win versus sort of a quote-unquote fluke loss. But to your point, you know, if you are standing at the end of the season with a zero, ideally, but maybe just one loss in the loss column, my guess is you're going to be rewarded when it comes to the playoff spots. So I think the sort of win in advance, almost sort of looking at the season as a prolonged playoff, with maybe an opportunity for one hiccup. Two's where I think it's going to get a little dicey, because there's going to be a lot of competition for others. And then it's going to come down to the quality losses, so to speak. And who did you lose to and by how much? And I think that's something to keep in perspective, from my opinion.
I've been saying from the beginning of the season, those folks who think, hey, two losses, you're in, not necessarily the case. However, I think there's going to be there'll be very few one-loss teams. I mean, like I said, this, you didn't expect this kind of loss for Alabama. You didn't expect this kind of loss for Tennessee. Ole Miss has one of those losses. So those are teams that I thought, you know, almost guaranteed to be playoff teams. Now, not so sure about it. So it's going to be very interesting as we come to the end, how that's going to be. But big game, though, for Penn State. If they could get past USC, boy, does it look good for them for the rest of the season, with just Ohio State as a test. So I know early in the week, but I want to get your thoughts on Penn State USC.
I think I actually this week checked the line to see what it was. I know you'd like to ask me what I think it is. So this week I'll be cheating. I think it's 3.5 Penn State. And, you know, just given the track record of Penn State going out there, Penn State should win. So maybe I'll go 28-27 Penn State. You know, I hope I'm wrong. Hope Penn State covers for people like you that have a lot of money in the game. You know, good teams win, great teams cover. Hope Penn State's a great team. But just sort of what you were talking about before, though, I mean, that's sort of the point we're seeing now is you look ahead past USC, which we shouldn't look back past them, but other than Ohio State, Penn State should win the remaining game. Doesn't mean they will. That was sort of the lesson, I think, from this past weekend, and which is why, you know, you really, as a coach, I think it was one of the reasons that made Saban so special was just the fact that he wouldn't allow these mental letdowns that inevitably are going to happen to younger players.
All right, that's going to have to be it for quarter number three. And for Steve, because we've got a special guest coming in for quarter number four, stay tuned for that.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante with our special guest, Jen Farang. Jen is the general manager of Penn State's collective, Happy Valley United. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
You know, you have a big event coming up, Whiteout Weekend, a Whiteout party, which is going to be Friday before the Whiteout Weekend. We're going to get to that. But before we do, I thought it'd be helpful for our listeners to talk a little bit about the collective, Happy Valley United. I think all college sports fans have heard about the collectives. I'm not sure many really understand what they're all about. Maybe you could help us out.
Sure, that'd be great. I think, you know, especially maybe at Penn State, NIL seems to somewhat be a negative term. But really, when it's very simple, when you think about it, what we do is we're a team of people that get together and find opportunities for student athletes across all the sports, across all 31 sports, across all 800 athletes. And we do that through what we're going to talk about today, events. We sell memberships to Happy Valley United. We start as low as $10 a month. So I think a lot of people think, well, that's up to the big donors. You hear all these splashy stories about, you know, the Tysons in Arkansas and, you know, these big donors, Nike, Phil Knight for Oregon, of course. But, you know, we have a big alumni base. And if everybody could give $10, there's lots of different ways to support. We run the 50-50 at the games. And then that money is used, the money we fundraise is used to create opportunities for athletes to utilize their name, image, and likeness to create great opportunities to grow their brand.
And I think what's important to understand too, Jen, this, you mentioned the over 800 athletes at Penn State. This isn't just about football.
Correct.
It's about all the sports. And Penn State has a lot more sports than a lot of the other schools.
We do. We do. And we need the support for those student athletes. So it's not just about football and basketball, but it's across all the different sports. And, you know, one of the reasons I do it, I'm an alum. I was there for both national championships in 82 and 86. And it's a tremendous feeling to be part of that. And we want to win. We want to be competitive. And, you know, it's not all about football, but I did last week get a note from a mother. And it was, I'll tell you, it made all of our weeks. It made my day. It made our week. And it was all about thanking us for the opportunities that are being given to her son through the collective. And that's why we do it. I mean, those stories are tremendous.
You know, Jen, I'm disappointed. You got both national championships. I'm a little older than you. I just missed out. I graduated in 81.
Oh, yes, you did.
So I did just miss out. One of the misconceptions, I think, with collectives, too, is what is their relationship to the university itself? I know it's not part of the university, but it has to work with the university.
Right. I mean, we are a separate entity, as you said, but we do need to collaborate with the university. And I think we're doing a better job of that now to find opportunities, to identify people that want to support NIL through the collective and for Penn State and for different athletes as well.
Now, you mentioned, and I think it's a great point, we at Penn State have this large, very large alumni group, and that's one of the advantages Penn State probably has over a lot of the other universities. So how do you, what do you say to those folks who say, hey, wait a minute, I'm already spending a lot of money on tickets, my hotels for the weekend, I'm already giving the money, so what difference does that $10 a month as a membership make?
It can make a big deal. Again, if we had everybody contributing even $10, I mean, we're running sweepstakes right now. We're running a sweepstake for the USC game. You can contribute to enter that sweepstake as much as a dollar, Jim. So don't think that even spending another $5, another $10 a month is a big deal, because if it or is not a big deal, because everybody who does that across our wide, you know, scaled alumni base, that's a lot of money. That does add up to a lot of money. And you know, that is a big advantage, but one disadvantage we have is we are in State College. We're not in LA, we're not in Philadelphia, we're not in Pittsburgh. So we're not close to the center of a lot of big companies that ultimately support sports in their markets. So we have to rally the troops, rally the alumni base to help us, even if it's a small level. Don't ever think that any contribution that you can make towards this will not help.
And I've fortunately been involved in a couple of the events for the non-major sports, and it's great. And especially there, it doesn't take a lot of money to make a difference with those. Now, if you're a donor to the collective, can you direct the sport where your money goes?
You can, absolutely. So if you go to our website and you make a contribution or you join as a member, there's a drop-down menu of every sport, and you can direct to the sport of your choosing.
And very easy website, happyvalleyunited.com.
Correct.
Easy to remember. So that's not a problem.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk, before we get to the big whiteout party, mm-hmm. let's talk about a couple other events that you might have going on. Especially, we've got the USC game on the West Coast coming up. You have an event for that, which sounds really interesting to me.
We do, yes. And as Jim said, you can go to our website, happyvalleyunited.com, happyvalleyunited.com, to find out information about memberships, how you can do a one-time contribution, and then all of our events, of course. So we have a luncheon coming up it's going to be really pretty cool, at SoFi Stadium on the Friday before the game. And that's going to be 12 to 2 p.m., there's going to be a tour of the stadium and then a luncheon right after that, really to, you know, again, raise money for football and specifically, and should be a really fun event. And you can get all the information about the tickets, the timing, where it is, how to get there, all of that. That's on our website.
And for those who don't know, that SoFi Stadium, that's the new stadium.
Right.
That the Rams and Chargers share. I mean, that looks like this space age kind of stadium thing going on, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed I can't go.
Oh, geez. Well, yeah. So am I. But I think that part would be really cool. And just because I have to do it, why can't we build a new stadium like that, Jen, for us?
Alice? Well, yeah. I think you know the answer to that, Jim.
That one might be a little behind the budget.
How about we
chatted a little bit before we started recording. You mentioned another event, which I think will be really cool, which is an open practice for the men's basketball team.
Yes. Yeah. We're kicking off the men's basketball season in fine order on 11-1, and that's going to be from 3 to 5 at the BJC. And we'll be coming out with information on that shortly. We have a call today to finalize all those details, but there'll be the opportunity for autograph signings to kind of get an up person close and close look at the team this year. We'll be doing giveaways, so it should be a really great event for men's basketball. And we do need a lot of support for men's basketball, because I think they always feel like they're in the shadow of the football team. So this will be a great event, and it's going to be a free event. So look for information on that shortly on our social media channels. And again, you can go to our website.
Well, that one's fantastic. I highly recommend that. I got the opportunity to interview Mike Rhodes. What a great guy. He actually comes from my area of the state. So
Okay. We
had quite a bit in common, and Joe Crispin is around. Fantastic guy. If you get a chance to chat with those guys, you won't regret it. They are a lot of fun, do a great job. The same thing with the basketball players.
Yeah.
Really super interviews, a lot of fun. You'll enjoy talking to them. All right, Jen, I spent time on the other stuff. Let's get to the big event that we're supposed to be talking about, and that's the Whiteout Party, which, gee, by coincidence, is going to be during Whiteout Weekend.
Right. Right, yeah. So we're really excited about this. We have about four events during the year that we try to run on an annual basis, and this will be the first one of its type. There's going to be a band, Velveeta, which I know a lot of people in State College get excited about and like to see them. And it's at the brand new Nittany Lion Inn, which I stayed there this weekend, put a plug in for the Nittany Lion Inn. What a fantastic property now. It's just tremendous. So that'll be 11-8, the Friday before 7 to 11 p.m. And there'll be giveaways. We'll have Letterman there, former Letterman, Mike Boddy, Jordan Hill, Christian Hackenberg, possibly Adam Brenneman. Who knows, LeVar may make a visit. So it should be a great event. And for those of you who have been to our other events, we at the Shore and in Philly and the golf outing we ran in Central PA, we tend to throw a pretty good party. And we're hoping to fill the room. The room can hold 500 people. We're at about 100 right now. So we really need all of us to sign up, buy your ticket, and show up.
You buried the headline, Jen. Open bar.
Oh, you're right, Jim. I did. Jim, thank you so much, Jim. I forgot. We like to gamble and we like to drink in State College. So, yeah. Thank you for that.
I'm not sure if it says more about the event or more about me in remembering that. So I'll tell you what, it seems like this is the way to make it a full weekend celebration, because, you know, I travel into State College. I live an hour and a half away. So it's about the tailgating prior to the game, obviously the game itself. But a lot of folks, you come in for the weekend for Friday. What a great way to spend Friday night.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, we know how to throw a good party, and it should be a fantastic time. But again, we need to really fill the room. There's going to be a commemorative giveaway as well that we'll have every year for kind of the first 150 people. So all good.
So not just get there early. That will be on the Friday night before the Whiteout game. Jen, thank you so much for coming on, letting us know a little bit more about the collective and the events coming up. Hopefully we get a chance to do this again.
All right, Jim, thank you so much.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesdays, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.